I shivered in the light breeze, and Philip quickly shrugged out of his coat and wrapped it around my shoulders. I grasped Philip Hell's and tried not to imagine how I must look, all muddy and wet, with my gown clinging to me. Thankfully, Philip's eyes had never strayed below my face. He was obviously more of a gentleman than I had first assumed. A discreet cough sounded behind me. I turned. It was the coachman who had driven me here. He gestured towards Philip's horse and asked,
"Shall I take him for you, sir?"
"Yes, thank you."
Philip handed him the reins, and the man led the horse off towards some buildings on the north side of the house. Those must be the stables, I thought. Then I realized, belatedly, that Philip was here, at Edenbrook, and that the coachman seemed to know him. Suddenly, everything became clear to me, like pieces of a puzzle snapping into place. With the puzzle complete, all of the frustration and anger I had felt that morning at the inn resurfaced.
"You live here," I said.
It sounded like an accusation.
"Don't be angry with me."
Philip's eyes were warm, his smile cajoling. I smiled sweetly.
"Why should I be angry?"
He looked surprised.
"That was easier than I had anticipated."
"No, I am asking you a question. Which action are you specifically asking me to not be angry about? Concealing your identity?"
I glared at him.
"Deceiving me so I would confide in you? Or could it be your heavy-handed methods of getting me here? Sending your servants to manipulate me into coming on your terms?" Philip leaned toward me and spoke quietly in my ear.
"Your anger might be more impressive if you were to stomp your foot. Perhaps you should try that next time."
I gasped in outrage and pulled away from him. He smiled wickedly. I took off his coat and shoved it at him, then turned on my heel and strode toward the house, intent on leaving behind that man and the amusement on his face as quickly as I could. Venting my anger had done nothing to diffuse it. It still coursed through me, pounding against my mind with every beat of my quickened pulse. Arrogant, presumptuous, deceitful man! Betsy shrieked when I walked through the door of my bedchamber.
"What happened to you?"
"I fell into the river." Her mouth dropped open. "Please, don't say a word." I did not want to explain to her my latest embarrassment. Betsy started pulling leaves and sticks out of my hair while I tried to unfasten my gown, which was that much more difficult for being wet.
"Oh, it will not do," she said. "There is too much mud. I shall have to wash it."
I groaned in frustration. "Perhaps you can send word that I will be late for dinner." Betsy ran out of the room, and I continued to try to unfasten my gown. I wished I could blame all of my bad mood on Philip, but the truth was, I was equally frustrated and angry with myself. If I had not been so impulsive and childish, this would never have happened. Betsy returned with the news that the cook had already been told to hold dinner half an hour. No doubt that was Philip's doing. Now I would have to think he was thoughtful, and I did not want to think anything nice about him. My thoughts turned to Philip's little mystery at the inn as Betsy washed and arranged my hair. I wondered why he had worked so hard to conceal his identity. He must have known I would discover it soon enough. "Betsy, do you know the names of Lady Caroline's children? She was so good at collecting information." "Charles, Philip, William, and Louisa," she rattled off.
"In that order?"
She nodded. It was as I had suspected then. Philip was the younger brother to Sir Charles, whom Cecily planned to marry. But why did he bother keeping his identity a secret from me? I could think of no good answer. When I entered the drawing-room with damp but tidy hair, Lady Caroline introduced me to her sister, Mrs. Clumpet. She had a genteel air about her, and a pleasant face with a mouth that tended to curve upward, so that she looked as if she was always smiling. Mr. Clumpet stood tall and lean by the fireplace, one finger keeping his place in a book he held. He bowed and said he was pleased to meet me, but his eyes strayed to his book as he spoke.
"Wild Animals of India,"
he said, catching me looking at his book.
"Do you know much about them?"
I shook my head.
"You may borrow this when I'm through. It's simply fascinating."
The door opened behind me, and without looking, I knew who it was by the sudden tension in the air.
"Finally,"
Lady Caroline said. I turned around, and there was Philip, with a little glint of amusement in his eye.
"I believe you two have already met," his mother said.
Philip bowed to me.
"Miss Daventry, I trust you had a pleasant journey."
Was he referring to my journey down the river? Probably, if his smile was any indication. I noticed he wore a different coat, which reminded me that I was angry with him. But I also wanted to make a good impression, so I curtsied and said, "Yes, thank you." Before I had to think of anything more to say, the butler announced dinner. Philip held out his arm to me. I had to take it, but that did not mean I had to enjoy the experience. I found it impossible to enjoy, actually, because his closeness, mixed with my anger, made me feel awkward and stiff. As we walked down the hall to the dining room, with his mother behind us, he said in a low voice,
"Try taking a deep breath."
I looked up in surprise.
"It might help you relax."
He smiled as if he could read every thought in my mind and considered them all highly amusing. What an obnoxious man! He knew I was uncomfortable, and yet he chose to tease me about it. I glared at him before turning my gaze away. I pulled as far away as I could, while still touching his arm, as he led me to the chair placed at the right hand of the head of the table, the place of honor. Of course, he sat at the head of the table, because he was determined to make me miserable. Well, just because I was sitting next to him didn't mean I had to talk to him. As we ate dinner, Lady Caroline led the conversation with questions put to me about how I liked Bath and how my father was faring. I did my best to ignore Philip, and gradually found myself relaxing amid the graceful politeness of Lady Caroline and the friendly smiles of Mrs. Clumpett, who was sitting across from me. Actually, she may not have been smiling at all, but merely watching me with her curved mouth. The effect was the same, however. Mr. Clumpett asked me if I knew about the bird life in Bath, and then he began a very long, one-sided conversation about his favorite birds and their habitats. His wife said something about the birds in India. Evidently, she had already read the book. And before I knew it, they were involved in a happy argument about the jungle bush quail. I was so entertained by it all that I accidentally glanced at Philip while I was smiling. It was as if he had been waiting that whole time for my gaze to turn to him. He leaned toward me and, under the noise of the footman changing courses, he quietly asked, "Won't you forgive me?" I knew he was asking forgiveness for withholding his identity from me at the inn. But now, most of my anger had been replaced with growing curiosity. After debating within myself for a moment, I finally said, "It would be easier to forgive you if I knew why you did it." He shook his head.
"I can't tell you that."
I narrowed my eyes. "Can't or won't?"
"Both,"
he said with a little smile. I found myself wanting to relent, especially when Philip smiled like that. But my pride demanded something, however small. "Then answer me this. Were you making a game of me for your own amusement?"
"No,
I was not making a game of you, and no, it was not for my amusement." But as if to belie his words, there was a familiar spark of light in his eyes. I lifted an eyebrow in disbelief. His lips twitched as if he was trying to hold back a smile.
"That's not to say that I haven't been entertained, but that was not my motive."
I thought of how I had sung that ridiculous song for him and fallen in the river twice, and how I must have looked earlier, sprawled in the mud while refusing his help. My cheeks burned with renewed embarrassment. No wonder he looked as if he was trying not to laugh. Oh, how my pride stung! "I'm gratified to know that I provide you with so much entertainment," I said, my voice sharp with sarcasm. His eyes lit up, just as they had at the inn when I had started my game.
"Are you really?" he asked. He leaned closer. "In that case, I will tell my mother that you plan to entertain us all with a song later."
I gasped. "You'd never!" He smiled broadly, then turned to his mother and said,
"Mother, I have discovered that Miss Daventry is an accomplished singer. You must persuade her to perform for us later."
She smiled at me.
"Oh, yes, we would love to hear you sing."
I clutched my fork in one hand as terror flew through me. I am not an accomplished singer. In fact, I rarely sing for other people."
"Let this be an exception, then," Philip said.
Mrs. Clumpett spoke up.
"I would dearly love to hear you sing, Miss Daventry, and I will accompany you if you wish."
I was trapped. In my nervousness, my clear thinking deserted me. "Very well."
Lady Caroline turned to say something to Mrs. Clumpett. I set my fork down and plotted revenge on Philip. The first thing I would do was tell him exactly what I thought of him. But when I looked at him, ready to deliver a scathing diatribe on his horrible manners, he winked at me. The action surprised the words from my lips. The audacity of this man was beyond anything I had known before. I was at a complete and total loss. The only thing I could do was accept my defeat as graciously as possible.
"A hit, sir," I murmured.
"Thank you," he answered, with a self-satisfied smile.
I had lost my appetite. The thought of singing in front of everyone had frightened it away. Staring at my plate, I tried to settle the butterflies that were suddenly migrating in my stomach. Singing a little made-up song for Philip, when he knew it was a joke, was one thing. This was completely different. This was not a joke. And I was going to humiliate myself in front of all these nice people. It was inevitable. There was a reason Grandmother had warned me not to sing. My heart raced in nervous anticipation, panic streaming through my veins. I picked up my glass, but found my hand was shaking too much to carry it safely to my lips. I set it back down. The last thing I needed was to spill my drink down the front of my gown.
"What is wrong?"
Philip's voice was low, and his brow knit with concern.
"Nothing," I lied.
I stared at my plate, trying to breathe slowly, or at least normally. It wasn't working. Philip was still watching me. Luckily, no one else seemed to be paying attention.
"You're a terrible liar. What is it?"
My face was burning, my stomach in knots. This was only getting worse. I had to tell him.
"I can't sing," I whispered.
He looked surprised. "Yes, you can."
I shook my head. Lady Caroline turned to me.
"Marianne, I am so pleased to hear that you are musical. You know, Philip and Louisa are both very musical. I think we shall have many enjoyable evenings here now that you have joined us. Why, perhaps you and Philip could sing a duet."
Terror seized me. I looked at Philip in mute appeal. His lips twitched, then quivered, then his shoulders shook. I glared at him as he gave up the fight, leaned back in his chair, and laughed out loud. "Odious man!" Mrs. Clumpett asked,
"Oh, what joke have I missed?"
Philip said in a shaky voice,
"I'm afraid we have effectively terrified Miss Daventry. She may run away tonight and never come back."
Lady Caroline's brow wrinkled in consternation.
"Philip, please explain yourself."
I was surprised at how stern her voice could sound.
She doesn't want to sing for us, Mother. I volunteered her without her permission, he chuckled.
Mrs. Clumpet gasped. Mr. Clumpet rubbed a hand over his mouth as if to remove a smile and looked at his plate. Lady Caroline looked horrified.
Philip, it sounds to me as if you've been a terrible host. You have forced our guest into an uncomfortable situation, manipulated us into playing along with your game, and then laughed at her discomfort. And on her first night here.
She glared at him.
I am very disappointed in you.
All my terror changed to gratification upon hearing him rebuked so thoroughly. Philip at least had the decency to look chagrined, his cheeks faintly flushed as he received his scolding. Lady Caroline turned her attention to me.
You might suppose, based upon my son's behavior, that we have no sense of how to honor a guest in our home. Please believe me when I say that Philip's actions do not reflect the values of our family.
I glanced at Philip and noticed his jaw was clenched and his cheeks ruddy. How humiliating to be so scolded in front of a guest! A small bloom of compassion unfolded within me.
Lady Caroline, I'm afraid you misunderstood. I knew that he was playing a game the whole time. In fact, I am probably responsible for what happened just now.
I glanced at him. He was watching me with an arrested expression.
I started this game at the inn last night, and this is simply a continuation of it. So if you are angry with your son's behavior as a host, then you should also be angry with mine as a guest. I am sorry to have been the cause of such discord.
Lady Caroline listened to my speech with surprise.
Well, if you are not offended, then I will not be angry.
Her voice had softened to its normal mildness. She looked from me to Philip in obvious curiosity.
It seems you two understand each other and would get along better without my interference. I apologize for scolding you, Philip.
He smiled affectionately.
Mother, you should never apologize for scolding me. I am sure I would miss it if you ever stopped.
She laughed, and I sighed with relief. I did not have to sing. Lady Caroline was not angry, and Philip was not humiliated. Everything was comfortable again. Dessert was brought in, and during the momentary distraction, Philip turned to me with a warm look of gratitude.
I deserved that rebuke, and you knew it. You should have enjoyed it instead of stepping in to save me.
His eyes narrowed as he contemplated me, as if I were a puzzle he could not quite put together.
Why did you do it?
I shrugged, unable to explain even to myself why I had done it. Deserved or not, I hated to see you embarrassed. He looked into my eyes for a quiet moment before leaning closer and saying,
I can see that you are just as powerful an ally as an opponent.
Something passed between us then. In the quiet and the smiles that no one else appeared to notice. An agreement, it seemed. Perhaps even a truce.
Chapter 8. After dinner, we retired to the drawing-room. Nobody had to sing, although Mrs. Clumpet did play the pianoforte for a while. While she played, Philip joined me as I stood admiring a landscape hanging on the wall. It was a view of Edenbrook from a distant perspective. The artist had captured the grandeur of the building and the vastness of the land surrounding it. Gazing at the scene, I was overcome with a desire to use my own paints. I had not painted in so long, not since my mother died. I would love to paint this place, I thought, where there was so much inherent beauty. When I looked up at Philip, I discovered he was studying me as intently as I had been studying the painting. "It's beautiful," I said, nodding toward the painting. He turned to face me and leaned one shoulder against the wall.
That was precisely what I was thinking. Did he mean me? I felt myself blush and saw a look of pleasure cross his expression. I wondered if he had only said that to see me blush, and, if so, why would he want to do that? I also wondered why I seemed to blush so easily in this particular man's presence. I felt like a schoolgirl again, and it bothered me. I was frowning at the thought when I saw Lady Caroline glance our way, her look sharp with worry. "Watch out," I said in a quiet voice. "Your mother thinks you're being rude again."
"That's because you're blushing and looking grave. Smile, Marianne, or I'll receive another scolding."
I discovered it was nearly impossible not to smile, especially when he looked so highly amused and leaned toward me when he spoke, as if we shared a delightful secret. But I tried to resist. "You will receive another scolding if your mother hears you calling me Marianne. You know you should not, sir."
"Yes, but my mother's not listening to our conversation right now."
He grinned.
"So call me Philip."
I glared at him, trying to hide how much I liked his wicked smile. "You only got away with that behavior last night because of your little mystery. I'm sure you normally have better manners than this."
"You're right. I normally do."
He took a breath.
"But this is not normal, is it?"
He looked intently into my eyes, as if searching for something important. My heart stuttered at his warm look and his quiet voice and his nearness. Once again, it struck me that I had never met a gentleman in quite the same league as Philip. I felt stupid with discomfort, and I did not know what to do. I racked my brain for options. My first instinct, which was to run away, wouldn't do. I could pretend I hadn't heard him and say nothing unrelated to his question, but that would leave me looking foolish. I wished Cecily was here to advise me. She had always been better at flirting. Wait, was that what Philip was doing? Flirting? But why would he want to flirt with me? I realized I had taken so long with my own internal discussion that awkwardness now filled in the space where my answer should have been. Why could I not think of a response? Why didn't Philip say something else? I looked toward the pianoforte, wishing for an escape to open before me. As if he could read my thoughts, Philip leaned away from me and said in a casual tone, "I'm sorry for putting you in such an awkward situation earlier. I had no idea the thought of singing would discomfort you, especially considering your song last night." His eyes held a look of teasing. I breathed a sigh of relief. This was the sort of conversation I knew how to respond to. Light-hearted, I could do. Last night was different. It was a challenge I couldn't refuse. Besides, you knew it was a joke.
"I wish you could have seen your face when my mother suggested we sing together.
I have never seen a look of such pure and absolute terror on anyone." He chuckled.
"Tell me something. Which were you more afraid of? Being attacked by a highwayman or singing for us?"
"The latter," I said, laughing at myself, "without a doubt."
"I thought as much.
I feel certain there's a very entertaining story behind this fear of singing for people." I felt my face warm.
"Ah, the telltale blush. Now I'm very curious. Won't you tell me?"
"No, I would rather keep some embarrassing stories to myself." He laughed again, then gestured toward the pianoforte, and we joined the others, which was a relief to me. When the evening ended and I lay awake in bed, my thoughts went of their own accord to that intent look in Philip's eyes and his unanswerable question about whether or not this was normal. It was a very long time before I was able to fall asleep. Despite my inability to fall asleep quickly, I awoke before the sun next morning. I wasted no time, but jumped out of bed, threw on a gown, and hurried outside.
The morning was glorious, with the sky fading from night to dawn, and a light mist rising off the grass. I ignored the orchard, the bridge, and the rose garden that I had planned on exploring. Instead, I walked to the north side of the house, to the buildings I had noticed after I had fallen into the river. The new morning sunlight streamed through the windows, showing a neat and orderly stable absolutely empty of people. Perfect. I passed several stalls occupied by horses sleeping or quietly munching on oats. I stopped in front of a stall where a tall black horse looked expectantly over the door, as if waiting for me to come and greet it. I thought it might have been the horse Philip had been riding when I fell into the river, but I wasn't positive because I had tried so hard to avoid looking at him. As I approached the stall, the horse reached out its nose and nuzzled my hand. I smiled in delight. "What a beauty you are! What's your name?" Affixed to the stall door was a brass plate. "Roten," I read. "Is that it?" He threw his head up and whinnied as if in acknowledgement. I laughed. "A very well-trained horse, I see. Do you know any other tricks? I wonder what you would do for a little sugar. I wish I had some with me." "You might try singing to him," Philip said from directly behind me. I jumped a little, then spun around. "I see it's not just cows you have a rapport with." I wondered how long he had been standing there. "I did not think anyone else would be here," I explained sheepishly.
"Neither did I."
He came to stand next to me and looked directly into my eyes. His smile felt like a gift meant just for me.
"Good morning," he said, in a voice that matched the quiet of the stable and the warm friendliness in his eyes.
I did not know how to respond to that warmth and quiet. I was clearly just as hopeless as I had been last night. The only thing I could think to do was to retreat into formality.
"Good morning, sir," I said, dropping to a curtsy. "I hope you don't mind my visiting your horses."
He lifted an eyebrow. "I don't mind at all, but I will throw you out immediately if you call me sir one more time."
I laughed a little and relaxed into the informality he seemed to insist on and prefer. Philip reached into his pocket and handed me a sugar cube. Roten lipped it from my hand. I rubbed the horse's muzzle, and the soft skin with short whiskers tickled my palm. A small sigh escaped me. It had been too long since I had last been in a stable. I felt Philip's gaze on my face and looked up at him. He was studying me, just as he had the night before, when I had been looking at the painting. It made me aware of the fact that I had spent less than 3 minutes attending to my appearance this morning. Philip, on the other hand, had a freshly shaven jaw, and his wavy hair was slightly damp. I also noticed he was carrying a riding crop.
"Are you going for a ride?" I asked.
"I am. Would you like to join me?"
I took a deep breath and nodded before I could lose my courage.
"I would, if you don't mind."
"Not at all. I keep a couple of gentle mares for my mother and sister. I am sure they wouldn't mind if you rode one."
I smiled to myself. If I was going to do this, I would do it properly.
What would I do with a gentle mare? Invite her to tea?
Philip's head reared back a little with surprise. Then he chuckled. "What was I thinking? Of course you wouldn't want a gentle mare. In that case, I think I may have the perfect horse for you."
He led me down the aisle to another stall and introduced me to Meg. She was a light chestnut-colored filly with a delicate face and nice proportions.
"What is she, 15 hands? I asked.
Philip nodded. "She was the same size as my horse." I quickly banished the thought from my mind. It had been a very long time since I had allowed myself to think about my horse. It seemed disrespectful, in a way, to miss her when I missed my mother so much more. Turning my thoughts away from what once was, I studied Meg closely. She looked absolutely perfect. I nodded, hiding my delight behind a straight face.
"I suppose she'll do,"
Philip said he would have the horses readied while I changed. I ran back to my room and, with Betsy's help, changed into my dark blue riding habit. "Lucky for you, it still fits," she said. "Don't understand why you refused to try it on before you left Bath." I smoothed the skirt as I looked into the mirror, taking a deep breath. Trying on the riding habit had seemed too monumental before. My hand moved automatically to my neck before I remembered that the locket was gone. I dropped my hand to my side, wishing for something to hold on to, but all I had was what I saw in the mirror. I squared my shoulders. It would have to be sufficient then. When I returned to the stable, Meg was saddled and waiting for me at the mounting block. A groom stood at her head next to Philip.
"That was quick," Philip said approvingly,
then nodded at Meg.
"Up you go."
Meg shifted impatiently as I settled into the saddle. Perhaps my nervousness was apparent to her. It was nothing more than a fluttering in my chest, but the fact that it existed at all seemed both strange and justifiable to me. For most of my life, I had preferred the back of a horse to any other seat, but I had not ridden since the accident. I held the reins in one gloved hand, leaned forward, and spoke quietly to Meg while stroking her neck. Her ears turned back as she listened to me, and after a moment, the fluttering in my chest and Meg's restless shifting had both subsided. I could tell that we were going to be fast friends. The sun broke over the treetops as we set off toward the south end of the estate. Philip held his horse to a trot and rode next to me. The groom rode several paces behind us, at the discreet distance of a chaperone. When we reached a wide stretch of open field, I asked Philip, "Is there any reason we're going so slowly?" His bright, easy smile flashed. "None at all." I let Meg have her head, and she sprang into a gallop. It was exhilarating to feel the crisp morning air rushing past me. I knew I had missed this, but I did not know how much until now. I felt like something of myself flew back into me with the wind and the horses and the bright morning sky. Eventually, the open ground ended at the woods, and we reined in our horses.
"How do you like her?" Philip asked, nodding toward Meg.
"She's perfect." And she really was. Just spirited enough to keep it interesting without being difficult to manage. And so beautiful. I patted her neck and flashed him a smile. "A gentle mare would have never been able to keep up with you." He smiled too, but as if at a private thought.
"You're absolutely right."
I wondered what secret lurked beneath his smile. The morning sun had cleared off the mist from the land, and I was eager to see everything I could. "Will you show me the estate?" I asked. "It looks magnificent from what I've seen of it."
"With pleasure."
He turned his horse, and I followed him to a knoll with a lone tree atop it. We would see almost all of the estate from here.
"What a fine prospect," I remarked.
We were on the wilder side of the estate, looking down at the house. The tailored lawns and gardens were backed by the river, and the wooden bridge spanned it gracefully. Something about this view rang with familiarity. After a moment of thought, I placed it. This was the same perspective as that depicted in the painting in the drawing room. Admiration turned again to my desire to paint this scene myself, and I vowed to find some painting supplies and come back here on my own. Philip began to point out the boundaries of Edenbrook. From our vantage point, we could see for miles in all directions. It appeared to be a prosperous estate, without any sign of neglect. My estimation of Sir Charles grew. He must be a skilled landlord to manage everything so well. Of course, Cecily would only set her sights on the best of the best. I was more than a little curious to meet him. Lady Caroline had not mentioned his plans, but I assumed he would arrive in a week with Cecily and Louisa. When we turned to head back, Philip said, "Shall we see how these two match up? I'll race you back to the stables." Meg gave it her all, but Philip's horse looked like a blackbird, his hooves barely skimming the ground as he flew over it.
"That wasn't even close," I complained when we reached the stables.
He grinned. "I know, I had an unfair advantage." He patted his horse's neck. "He was bred to be a racehorse. He has the blood of the Godolphin stallion in him."
"He is magnificent." I looked admiringly at the pair of them. There was something about a handsome man astride a powerful horse that made my heart skip.
"Do you ride every morning?" I asked, after we had left the horses with the groom and were walking back to the house.
"Yes, nearly. And you?"
"No, my grandmother doesn't keep horses in Bath. I had to settle for a brisk walk, with a chaperone, of course." I grimaced at the thought of returning to that life.
"I'll have to amend that practice while you're here. Consider Meg yours any time you want her."
"Do you mean it?"
I tried not to sound as eager as I felt. "I do. You are well suited to each other, spirited enough to make it interesting without being difficult to manage."
He winked as I narrowed my eyes at him.
"Comparing me to a horse? What nerve!"
We reached the house and he stopped to open the door for me.
"And so beautiful," Philip said as I passed him.
I cast him a disparaging glance and he laughed as if he had said that only to see my reaction. Philip Wyndham was an incorrigible flirt, and I did not like that about him. Not one bit.
Chapter 9. At breakfast, Lady Caroline announced that she would be busy all morning. Having just returned from a month in London, she expected to be called on by all of her neighbours, and she was sure I would not want to spend my morning sitting in the drawing-room. She was right, but I still felt obligated to insist.
"I wouldn't mind meeting your neighbours," I said.
She waved a hand, shooing away my good intention.
"Some other time, my dear, but I wouldn't dream of leaving you alone on your first day here. Philip, do you mind changing your plans? You can make up for your bad behaviour last night by giving our guest a tour of the house."
Philip cast an amused look at his mother, who smiled back at him with an air of innocence.
"I would be happy to," he said.
"Oh, may I join you?"
Mrs. Clumpett asked, looking up from her plate with a smear of eggs across her upper lip. "I missed my morning walk with my husband, and I do feel it is important to have some form of exercise every day."
I smiled at her. "Please do." Now it seemed less of an imposition and more of a joint adventure. I had seen most of the first floor, so we started on the second floor, which consisted mostly of bedchambers, similar in elegance and comfort to mine. Philip was behaving himself so well, being nice and friendly without flirting at all, that by the time we reached the third floor, I felt almost completely comfortable in his company. Mrs. Clumpett exclaimed in soft tones of amazement over every room we stopped at, as if viewing it for the first time. I found it impossible not to smile in her company, and credited her presence for Philip's proper behaviour. He even referred to me as Miss Daventry. On the third floor, we came to a long gallery bearing paintings on each wall. I followed Philip's lead and stopped in front of the family portraits. The landscapes I would come and look at later on my own, when I would have time to really enjoy them. I looked at one portrait after another as Philip identified his various ancestors. I learned that his great-great-great-grandmother had insisted on calling the place Edenbrook because she thought it was as beautiful as the Garden of Eden. After viewing a long line of distant relatives, we stopped at the portraits of his immediate family. There was Lady Caroline, years younger and quite a striking beauty. Next to her hung a painting of a distinguished-looking man with the same wavy brown hair as Philip.
"My father,"
Philip said, his voice hushed. Philip's father was not a particularly handsome man, But there was a quiet, serious expression in his eyes that made me pause and look at him again. "He looks kind," I remarked, finally identifying the look of his countenance. Philip nodded.
"He was."
I looked at the rest of the group, recognizing a younger Philip. The girl in the painting next to his must be his sister Louisa, who had become such good friends with Cecily. Philip pointed to a portrait of a young man with light hair and a bright, carefree smile.
"My younger brother, William. He is coming with his wife, Rachel, in just a few days."
They were the ones that Cecily and Louisa were staying with in London. There was one portrait left. "And who is he?" I asked, noting he had the same jawline as Philip, but there was a languid expression about his blue eyes, as though he was bored with life.
"My eldest brother, Charles," he answered curtly.
Philip turned his gaze from the painting to me. In his eyes was a look so grave and so regretful that I had the distinct impression he had lost something he valued very much. The impression was fleeting, though, and by the time I recognized it, it was gone, and Philip had turned back to the painting. I was almost convinced I had imagined it entirely. I stole a quick glance at Philip to compare him to his brother. Even though they were both handsome men, Sir Charles had a look about him that made him seem unapproachable. In contrast, there was something so very likable about Philip's countenance. He was both handsome and friendly, and, in comparing the two, I had no trouble deciding which one I would prefer to spend my time with. Pausing before the painting, a thought flitted through my mind. This man, this Sir Charles, who was completely unknown to me at this moment, was the man my twin sister would marry. It was as good as done in my mind, for Cecily had never failed to achieve something once she set her mind to it, and she was not one to easily change her mind. That would make Sir Charles like a brother to me, and Philip, well, Philip would be like a brother to me as well. We would be family, connected by Cecily and Charles's marriage. I found myself smiling at the thought. I had never had a brother, but I thought I could imagine Philip excelling in that role. Mrs. Clumpet was still examining the landscapes when Philip turned from the portraits and motioned for me to follow him down the hall. He stopped in front of a door on my left, which led into a large room with wooden floors. "It's a fencing room," I said, noting the épées lining up inside the case on the opposite wall. I liked the echoing sound of our footsteps in the empty room and its lofty ceiling, lit from above by high windows. I sighed with pleasure and a touch of envy. I have always wanted to fence. I immediately regretted my words. That was precisely the sort of thing that an elegant young lady would not say. Grandmother would be appalled. But Philip did not look appalled, only curious.
"Why this unholy interest in a man's activity?" he asked with a smile.
"It seems like men are permitted to do so many fun activities, like fencing and hunting, while ladies are supposed to sit quietly in the house and practice their embroidery all day." I cast him a pained look. "Do you have any idea how boring it is to embroider?"
"Actually, I don't," he said with an amused smile. "But then again, I've never given it much thought."
"Well, let me assure you that there is nothing exciting about embroidery. But fencing, on the other hand..." I looked at him appraisingly, wondering how bold I dared be with him. He raised an eyebrow.
"What scheme are you plotting?"
I considered the odds and decided it was worth a try. "I was wondering, since my father will not teach me, and I don't have any real brothers, if you might, perchance, teach me how to fence."
"Any real brothers?"
Philip stared at me with a look that was part frustration and part amusement.
"Am I correct in assuming you've chosen me to play the role of a pretend brother?"
I bit my lip. It was clear I had offended him.
Of course, it would seem very presumptuous of me, especially considering our short acquaintance, to think of him as family. But I could not explain my thoughts to him. I did not dare reveal Cecily's plan to snare his older brother. I tried to cover my embarrassment by smiling innocently. "Would you mind?" His smile twisted, taking on an edge of mocking.
"I already have a sister, Marianne."
I cringed inwardly. It was just as bad as I had feared. My offense was obvious, and I felt stupid, so stupid, to have said what I did. Asking him to teach me how to fence? What young lady did that? And to assume a familiarity that he did not return? I burned with humiliation. "Pardon me," I said. "I should not have presumed." I cleared my throat. "Please excuse me. I am sure you have better things to do today than entertain me." Turning on my heel, I hurried to the door, wishing the floor would open up and swallow me whole. I had made it across the wide room and had my hand on the door handle when he spoke.
"I'm disappointed in you, Marianne."
I froze with my hand on the door.
"I never thought you would give up so easily, especially after just one paltry set-down."
I turned around, my pride responding to the challenge in his voice. I was not one to scamper away with fright, especially not when handed a challenge. Lifting my chin, I said, "I am not giving up. I am going to ask Mr. Klumper to teach me how to fence." It was a lie, and I was sure Philip knew it. But he smiled as he moved toward me.
"Ah, but do you really dare face him with the weapon in his hand? Wasn't dining with him dangerous enough?"
I bit back a laugh as I recalled the moment of alarm when Mr. Klumpet had launched his fork into the air while demonstrating the flight pattern of a certain species of bird. "You may be right," I said in an unsteady voice, my lips twitching. Philip grinned.
"I have a better idea," he said, reaching behind me for the door handle.
I did not move, trapped as I was between Philip and the door. Tipping my head back, I looked into his friendly eyes, my pride draining from me along with my embarrassment. I had a feeling that no matter what his idea was, I would want to say yes to it.
"What?" I asked, smiling without reservation. "Why don't you join me for a game of chess? It's not as exciting as fencing, but it can't possibly be as boring as embroidery."
I had been right. I did want to say yes to him. I was surprised at myself, for holding a grudge was one of my greatest strengths, or weaknesses, depending on how one looked at it. But a game of chess with Philip sounded like the most pleasant way to pass the afternoon. "I would like that," I said. "Where are we to play?" I asked as we left the fencing room.
"You'll see," he said, smiling at his aunt as she joined us at the top of the stairs. "I have saved the best of the tour for last."
The library was tucked away on the main floor, down a short hall across from the drawing room. We had to turn a corner from the hall to find the door to the library. And when Philip opened it for me, I felt as if I had been granted entry into a hidden sanctuary. It was definitely a man's room. The furniture was rich brown leather in straight lines, and a stone fireplace dominated one wall. Bookshelves embraced the room on every side. At the end of the room, farthest from the door, was an alcove with two leather chairs and a small table between them, which faced a large window that stretched from the floor to the high ceiling. The window filled the room with light and framed a view of the southeast side of the estate. I walked slowly into the serene, sunlit space, hardly noticing that Mrs. Klumpet had excused herself and barely registering the maid who stood in a far corner, removing books, dusting covers and spines, and then quietly returning them to their places. I stroked the back of a chair, gazed out the window, and turned in a slow circle, trying to take it all in. I was so captivated, I did not even feel the least desire to twirl. To do so would have been irreverent somehow.
You like it, Philip said, smiling.
I shook my head. No, I love it. I gestured to the bookshelves. Do you mind?
Help yourself, he said,
settling gracefully into one of the chairs by the window. He looked pleased. I looked at the titles on the nearest bookshelf and found a book on Greek mythology next to a book of poetry, which was flanked by a book on German philosophy. How are these organized?
They're not.
I turned to him. How do you find anything? There must be thousands of books here.
I like the search. It's like visiting old friends.
I studied him for a moment, intrigued by what he had just revealed about himself. Philip fit in this room as if it were a set of well-worn, comfortable clothes. I noticed with a twinge of admiration that he looked elegant, even lounging in his chair, with his long legs stretched out before him. Catching a look of amusement on his face, I realized that I had been staring at him again.
You look surprised, Marianne.
I am, I said frankly. He smiled as if he liked my answer. I returned to my perusal of his books and lost myself in the task. Unorganized like this, every step led to a surprise. I saw several books I wanted to look at more closely later, including a history of French politics and a book on Gothic architecture. I was so absorbed in my reverie that I jumped a little when Philip spoke again. I had almost forgotten he was there.
I'm curious about something, he said.
What were you doing in Bath? I walked to the chair across from his and sat down. My father sent me to live with my grandmother after my mother died.
And how did you feel about that arrangement?
It surprised me that he would ask such a personal question after our morning of impersonal conversation. I sighed. My feelings were too complex to delve into, so I picked the simplest one as an answer. I missed my home.
What did you miss about it?
His tone was quiet, and the room was hushed, the sky outside growing overcast. I picked at a thread on my skirt. The maid was still dusting books in the far corner of the room. She would probably be at it all day, and for many more days to come, considering the number of books on the shelves. She was too far away to hear us clearly, but that was not what made me hesitate to confide in Philip. Trust did not come easily to me, and I was not sure I was ready to confide in this man who was unlike anyone I had ever known before. I had worked so hard these past 14 months to build up layers around my heart, to shield myself from the wounds it bore, that I wasn't sure I knew how to open it anymore. I didn't know if I even wanted to open it. The very thought frightened me, and I had to seriously consider whether this was worth the risk of making myself vulnerable. Philip waited patiently for my answer, as if he would give me all the time I needed. He could be a friend to me until Cecily arrived. I enjoyed his company, and I admitted to myself I needed a friend. Perhaps a friend would be worth the risk. Taking a deep breath, I finally said, I missed everything. My family, of course, but also my home, my land, my neighbors and friends. Everything. I gestured out the window. I was thinking about how I even missed our orchard. I used to go there a lot, to paint or to read, or just to be by myself.
Why the orchard? Philip asked.
It was another question that required a personal and honest answer. He seemed intent on uncovering as much of my heart as he could. I haven't exactly thought about it before now, at least not enough to put words to it. I studied the orchard. The sky was grey, and the colours of the trees were muted. Under the vastness of the sky, the group of small trees was like an embrace, a protective space.
"There's something solid and constant about trees," I said quietly. "They may change through the seasons, but they are always there. They're dependable, and the orchard is not so vast as the woods. It's just big enough to hold me when I stopped, unsure of how to complete the thought.
"When you what?"
"When I need to be held, I suppose." I laughed self-consciously, embarrassed a little by what I had admitted. "That sounds odd, but sometimes I want to be away from other people, and I feel safe there." I looked quickly at him, anxious for his reaction. For once, there was no hint of teasing in his expression as he studied me.
"It's your sanctuary," he said simply. "That doesn't sound odd at all."
I hadn't realized I was tense until I felt my shoulders relax in relief. I nodded. It was a rare thing to be understood so quickly, and not merely understood, but accepted. I sensed that in his response. It made me want to tell him more.
"Our orchard at home is not as big as the one here at Edenbrook," I continued, "but the trees are just as thick and old. I used to hide there when I was in trouble as a child. I would climb right up as high as I could, and my governess would stand below and yell at me to come down."
Philip looked amused.
"And did you?"
"Come down? Not as long as she was standing there. One day, she brought a chair from the house and sat down in it with a book, as if she would spend all day there waiting for me if she had to. I was too stubborn to give in."
Philip raised an eyebrow.
I laughed. "Yes, it's one of my faults of which I have never been cured. Well, I refused to come down, and she refused to leave, so I sat up in the tree for most of the day. I finally had to come down because I had eaten so many apples that I had a horrible stomach ache and couldn't hold myself up any longer. My governess thought she had won our little contest of wills and had a terribly smug look on her face as she marched me into the house. But my mother took one look at me doubled over in pain and gave her such a severe scolding that she packed her bags and left the next day. I felt terrible about that and apologized to my mother for my stubbornness. Of course, I still received a scolding for my actions, but only once we were alone. That was one thing I always liked about my mother. She never scolded me when other people were there to witness my shame."
"You're like her in that way. I can understand why you would appreciate that quality so much."
I was puzzled for a moment.
"You rescued me last night from a scolding as well, remember?"
"Oh, that was nothing," I said.
He shook his head.
"Not to me."
I looked away from the sincerity in his eyes, not knowing what to say in response.
"I'm sorry I never met your mother," he said.
"What was she like?" I wished for my locket so that I might show him her picture, so he would not think I exaggerated. But words would have to suffice. She was exquisitely beautiful, with striking blue eyes and skin like porcelain. Her hair was so light it was almost white. When I was a little girl and she came into my room at night to tuck me in, I thought her hair looked just like moonlight. I paused, remembering her beauty. "My sister Cecily looks very much like her."
"I do not."
I smiled in a gesture for pardon. "I'm afraid I'm quite plain in comparison." Philip shook his head.
"I think you are taking modesty too far. I couldn't disagree with you more."
I immediately regretted that I had brought up the subject of beauty with Philip, who had already proven himself to be an incorrigible flirt. He was undoubtedly only saying what he thought I wanted to hear. "I am not too modest," I said, hot with embarrassment, "and I didn't say that in the hope that you would contradict me. I simply stated a fact in response to your question." Philip's lips twitched.
"Forgive me," he said.
"I didn't realize a compliment would offend you so.
I will try not to do it again. I struggled to press my own lips into a firm line. The amusement in Philip's eyes was too infectious to resist, though, and I laughed reluctantly. I'm sorry I reacted that way.
Don't apologize,